and it was based on a lot of different studies revealing amount of information coming into the brain and information coming out, you know, input-output correlations.
Okay, because there was a paper in 1962 by George Miller that was a magic number 7 plus or minus 2, which people in the neurolinguistic programming community use.
Seven
plus or minus 2, that you can attend to 7 plus or minus 2 aggregates of information.
With the conscious mind?
With the conscious mind.
Oh, yeah, with the conscious mind is very limited.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the one, like, you know, for us, it was so annoying. It's like the number of times I've been caught, like, in the rain trying to make a phone call at a payphone, you know, look up the telephone number, 7 digits.
Oh, right.
By the time I get the coin ready to go in the machine, I can't even remember the 7 digits,
right,
you know?
Right.
So it's like you can only handle so much in your conscious mind. The subconscious mind is one of your, potentially your most powerful allies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But if misprogrammed, one of your worst enemies. In a sense that if the programs are, mm-hmm. are not supporting you, since they're more powerful, they will undermine you in your life. This is what, you know, what I came to find out.
Which continues the momentum of people in difficult circumstances.
Well, yeah, and the issue about this is that what neuroscientists collectively agree on now is that the unconscious or subconscious portion of the mind runs the show minimum 95%, most likely 99% of the day.
Oh, yep.
Okay, yep. What does that mean? So it says I have two processors running, a conscious and a subconscious. The subconscious one is a million times more powerful, and it generally runs the show 95 to 99% of the time. So now all of a sudden you say, okay, what is the connection between them? And this is where we really have, this is where we need, the new psychology starts to come into play. It goes like this. There was the perception for a long time that if my conscious mind would become aware of something, it would change my subconscious responses to that same information. So if I like the concept of cognitive therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
let
me go back through my life and identify, oh, your mother did this and your father did that and this happened and your girlfriend did this and whatever. And you, now you go back over your life and you see all those things that happened to shape your life. And now you're very aware of it. But the big question is now that you've become aware of it, is your life any different than it was before? And the answer is it's pretty much exactly the same as it was, but I am aware of the problem.
Right.
But I still have a problem.
Well, it's a step closer. Yeah.
Yeah. And here's where, and this is where the problem comes from. And this is especially important because a lot of people tout the concept of positive thinking.
Yes.
And that it works for some people, but it doesn't really work for the majority. And it really irritates a lot of people because they realize it, when they come down and finally say, okay, let's do positive thinking, and then that doesn't work, then it's even, man, woe with me. I can't even get positive thinking to work.
Right.
And so they become even more entrenched in the problem. And the reason now is this is very important because this is, if people get this fact, this is the first doorway to go on to changing your life. And it's like this. The conscious mind is the creative, volitional mind, the one that's connected to our spiritual identity, ourselves. The subconscious mind is a tape player. It learns an experience, and it becomes a tape that is a push button, just like a jukebox.
Mm-hmm.
Push the button, the song's going to play. You push this button, that song's going to play. What's the point about it? Well, let's say you go to the jukebox, and you push the button, and a song is playing, and you realize you don't like that. That song isn't doing well for me. That's like a behavioral program that's not really doing good. I've identified a song I don't like. So I'm at the jukebox and I start talking to the jukebox going, listen, I don't like that song. Could you play a different one? I don't like this one. And you realize as you're talking, the jukebox is still playing a song. And then you really start, now you get mad because it's ignoring you and you start yelling at the jukebox. Well, damn it. I said, change this song. And then, you know, it doesn't change. And then after that anger part comes, then God has to come in and you say, God, I can't fix this song. Would you fix the song? And it's still playing. And we start to get very, very upset, and it seems to be a very hopeless situation.
And it goes into a negative
tape loop. You can't get out
loop.
Of it. And the point was this.
Negative attractor, yeah.
The subconscious mind is specifically a tape player. You can yell at the tape. You can talk to the tape. You can beg, plead. But it's the same as have a tape player in your house. Put the tape in there. Push the play button. The program's playing. And you're trying to talk to it, but there's nobody in there. And that's been the biggest problem. We've always thought, well, like in my conscious mind, I have a conscious thought that I can, you know, evaluate my behaviors and I can, you know, give characters and qualities and think about things and create new ideas. And then we go to the subconscious mind and find out there's nobody in there. It's a hardwired device. You learn something, all you have to do is push the button, you will automatically play that program, and you will play it the same way that you learned it, no matter how old you are. 50, 60 years, you push that button, it's going to play the same program. And what's the point? Now let's go back to the concept of power of positive thinking. Positive thinking, that's a belief in my conscious mind that says, I would like to change the quality and character of my life. I'm creatively, this is what I would like rather than what I'm doing. Okay, now I'm thinking positive thoughts. Well, why am I doing that? Because I want to convince myself to have this positive action. Yeah, but who are you talking to with the positive thoughts? The tape player. Is it going to hear you? No. Oh. There's nobody in there.
Right.
And the tape player doesn't have an evaluator of the program. So the idea, there's nobody in the subconscious that says, this is a good behavior, this is a bad behavior, this is the behavior we learned.
Milton Erickson talked about the unconscious mind being socialized about 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the very time when these major tapes are being programmed.
And it's actually started in utero. We now know that through pregnancy, the subconscious mind is downloading patterns. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what patterns is a fetus getting? And the answer is, something we left out of the equation. When a woman is pregnant and an OBGYN is talking about this woman and her ability to carry and develop this child, all they ask her, are you eating well? Are you taking vitamins and minerals? Are you exercising? All they're asking is are you as a mother providing nutrition to the child? And the suggestion, well, why such a limited contribution from the mother? And the answer is, conventional belief says that the fetus is genetically driven, that the unfoldment of the whole thing has only genes, so the only thing the mother has to do is provide the food. The genes control the development. But now we have a new understanding. The genes respond to the environment.
And the energy.
And the energy of the field. Now, but what's interesting is this. Yes, the mother's blood comes to the placenta, and then nutrition passes from the placenta to the fetus, and then waste matter from the fetus goes back to the placenta, which then goes into mother's blood, and she takes care of her with her own organs. Mm-hmm. But then here comes this question that nobody dealt with, and the question was this. Is nutrition the only thing that's carried in blood? And the answer is, of course not. What's carried in blood?
Yeah.
Emotional chemicals are carried in blood. Yep. Integrating chemicals,
as Candace Pert has shown.
Yeah. All the things that coordinate the physiology of the body. What's the relevance? If the mother is experiencing something in her world, be it emotional or physiological, the information that coordinates her response to it and her sensation to it, that information crosses the placenta, and the baby is getting the exact same experiences.
And is literally building their body on the instructions from the mother.
From the environment, which is the mother's interpretation. But it's an intelligent move when you go back to we used to believe that genes controlled life and your program was given to you at fertilization and that it was your pre-program. Well, that wouldn't make any sense for nature to do that, because if the environment is ever changing as it is, how can I pre-plan what genes I'm effectively going to need to stay alive in an environment 40 years from now? I have no idea what that's going to be. Mm-hmm. And it works out, that was a mistake. Genes are not hardwired pre-programmed. Genes are adjusted and selected by the environment at the time. Mm-hmm. And this allows the organism to adapt to the environment. So what's the role of the mother? She reads the environment, interprets it. The information goes into the child, programs the genes of the child, so the child will be better physiologically adapted to the world it's going to live in. Mm-hmm. So that, the genes are involved with making a pattern. They do. They make a human baby. Two arms, two legs, head, nose, eyes. It makes all those parts. But which parts should be built up and which parts should have different characters to them? That's not the response of the genes. The genes just made the body. The environment selects that, so that if the mother perceives the environment as not supporting, a threatening environment, then this baby is getting a feedback and says, this environment's not going to support you. So what you're going to have to do is be a fighter. So what's going to happen? The physiology of the fetus changes, the muscles get built up, the bones get built up, the hind brain gets built up because we're making a street fighter.
Yep.
But it comes at a cost. You don't just build everything up, you have to take away. So you know what's interesting is that in making a child to fit in a stressful environment and building its body and giving its hind brain, the hind brain is reflex behavior, coordinates that. The compensation is forebrain and cerebrum. Mm-hmm. It gets less. Mm-hmm. That in fact, you can reduce the forebrain and consciousness and the intelligence of a child 52% by pre and perinatal conditions that during the development of the child.
Amazing.
52% latitude. Now, but what it's not, it's just that it didn't lose 52% of its intelligence. In losing its forebrain intelligence, it's compensated by making better hindbrain. So I'm making a street fighter or an athlete in a child that is evolving in a mother who lives in a stressed world. Mm-hmm. But that's nature's Head Start program. Because if the world really was that stressed, that child will have a better option of surviving than one with a better forebrain and less developed body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, the nature does this adjustment. But then all of a sudden it says, but the parents are nature's Head Start program. And their attitudes and emotions are shaping the development of this child. So now go back and think, how many children were conceived by parents who were not expecting this child, who did not want this child,
yep.
who were threatened by this imposition,
yep.
and having those feelings, how many children grew up in an environment that was hormonally and chemically and emotionally driven to be rejected even before they were here?
Yep.
And these issues all of a sudden says, yes, this is what we're beginning to find out, that the first 6 years and the earlier the information is, the more powerful it is, because it's a simple logic.
Sure. Yep.
First information in, most powerful information.
Right, right.
And so things that birthing conditions that a child goes through, if it's a difficult birth, that has a profound effect on the psychology of that child for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
If the child was conceived in an environment where that child was unwanted, that child already knows that, whether it was not like a conscious thing, it is a feeling. It's because it's gotten the emotional chemistry of rejection before it even was developing. So it's like, these are profound changes. And for the first 6 years of a child's life, its brain is not even operating in as a predominant wave state in consciousness.
Yep, yep,
that
yep,
its brain is in a hypnagogic level of brain activity.
Yep, in theta.
So the first 6 years is, I'm downloading perceptions of how I respond to the world. Well, where are you getting them from? My parents.
Yep. Yep.
And so now here's the interesting part about this. And that brings up the nature of why our subconscious behaviors are oblivious to us. Meaning this, most everybody out there, including myself, was thinking, I'm running my life, and these are my intentions and wants and desires. You know, I want to have a nice, loving relationship. I'm good on the job. I should get a raise. I'm really the great guy here. How come my life doesn't match these conscious expectations? And the answer is, because 95 to 99% of your life is coming from the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but wouldn't I see if that behavior was adverse? And the answer is no. And the simple reason is this, the two minds work in tandem with each other. The consciousness can run the entire system. It'd be very difficult in the sense of, you know, the demands on consciousness of not really
to beat
entire
your
system.
Heart and make your liver work.
It can do, it can run any of those things. You get a yogi who can adjust their body temperature, adjust their heart rate, adjust their physiology. You can adjust anything.
Yeah.
But the narrowness of this conscious mind and how much data it can handle, it has to give a lot of the turnover to the other mind. But then it comes to this part. When you're thinking about something and not paying attention to the immediate moment, if you're in your head thinking about the future, thinking about the past, immediately says your conscious mind's not here. Yeah, but then who's running the show? Well, the subconscious mind.
Right.
But the problem with that is because you're not here, then you're not seeing the subconscious mind. So therefore, you're not seeing your own behavior. But the best example of that, I just love it because many people are familiar with this. If you know somebody and you know their parent, and at some point you realize, you say to this person, let's say you know a woman and you know her mother, and you realize that their behaviors are pretty much the same.
Yep.
And you have the audacity to say to this woman, you know, you're just like your mom.
Ooh.
Be very careful. Ooh. Now, the question is, wait a minute, how come she doesn't see this? It's an example of what I'm trying to say about the oblivious nature of when the subconscious is running the pattern that she downloaded from her mother, her mother's behavior. It's running from the subconscious and she herself doesn't see it. Why is it relevant? When being confronted with the fact that you said she's just like her mother, she checks into her conscious mind and says, I am nothing like my mother.
Not consciously.
consciously, mm-hmm. but since the subconscious is running 95 to 99% of the time, then 95% of the time you are like your mother,
right.
but you don't see it. So mm-hmm. our issues really come from the fact, oh my God, neuroscience is finally revealing that the operation of our system is coming from the subconscious mind, and that its primary programming was before six,
right.
that its teachers were the people in our environment, primarily our parents or our primary caregivers, and that we downloaded how they responded to the world into our subconscious mind. And so when the stimuli that they responded to show up, we will play the same behavioral tapes that they played, but we won't see it. Because if it's being run by the subconscious at that moment, that meant the conscious mind wasn't paying attention and never saw it in the first place. So it's a mystery to why our life doesn't work out in the intention that we have.
Right.
And then, of course, not seeing that we were involved with that, we immediately blame the environment.
And project it onto someone else.
Someone else,
right.
God, the universe, mm-hmm. is not giving me what I really want. And mm-hmm. it's like, oh my God, it's us. We were sabotaging ourselves, and we didn't see it.
So how do we change this?
Well, good question, because there are a variety of ways.
Right.
And the way that I started, was something that I now have come to learn is called Buddhist mindfulness. Meaning that if you think about this, let's say you're driving a car and you come to the stoplight, and it's at the stoplight, all of a sudden you realize as you're waiting for the green light to go, your head's spinning. And it's got all these thoughts going through, like, well, this is what you're going to be doing, and this is how this is going to work out. You don't realize that you're actually planning, projecting what's happening. And a psychologist will reveal, if you actually tabulated those thoughts, 70% or more are negative and redundant. So in your head, you have negative thoughts. Well, that's not going to happen. Oh, that won't work, and all these kind of things. And what you're really doing is you're projecting the future before it even starts. So what I started to realize when I started to hear...
And then that's part of the environment. And then the body goes, oh, you want that? Great, we'll do that.
And that's the unfortunate part is the subconscious mind has, again, nobody to evaluate the program, if it's a good, bad, or whatever for you.
Mm-hmm.
All it does is this, that the behavior will be coherent with the program.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So here's this catch. Let me... Why this is so important, because we've all seen this. We've been in some store, Kmart, Target, something like that, and you're seeing a family pushing around their cart, and then you're seeing one of their kids throw a tantrum because that kid wanted a toy. And then stop long enough and say, what did the parent say to that kid? Now, let's just say that kid was me, and I'm like 6 years old, and I'm throwing a tantrum for this toy, and my parents say to me, you don't deserve that. Okay, now let's look at the mechanism I'm operating from. I'm operating from a brain that's in a hypnagogic trance.
Yep.
And the hypnagogic trance is a download of that statement, I do not deserve. Okay, mm-hmm. It's not going to happen on once, but it's a tendency for parents to repeat these over and over again.
Yep.
What's the point? Okay, let's say my parent has said that to me a number of different times. Now I'm 40 years old. And I'm thinking in my office, well, why am I not getting this promotion? Because I'm really worth it. I'm good at what I do. I'm better than all these other people. And I'm getting bypassed all the time. What the hell is wrong out there? And then if you stop long enough to think, is that, well, 95 to 99% of my behavior is not coming from this mind with a great desire and intention. It's coming from a mind that has a program I do not deserve. Well, what does that mean? Well, when I'm not paying attention, I will engage in behavior that is coherent with the program.
Yep.
I will sabotage myself.
Yep. Yep.
So
yep.
then I don't see that, because that's the part that's oblivious, right?
Right?
What do I see? I didn't get the raise. Well, what do I know? It's my intention to get the raise. And I didn't get the raise. It must be somebody's fault out there.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden we give up control of our lives and say, I am a victim to this world because I really have a conscious... desires and aspirations that I'm not getting. And so the universe is not giving it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So we go back to, we say, okay, we got these programs. So the question that you asked and I took a tangent on was, okay, now that I got these programs, what do I do about it? And I said, well, listen, first of all, your brain will be playing these programs, okay?
Right.
And the other issue that's very important is the conscious mind may have no conscious awareness of these sabotaging programs. The reason is this: conscious mind wasn't even operating when these programs were being downloaded. And the question is, well, can my conscious mind understand what's in my subconscious? And the answer is, not really, because it's not like a library. I can go in and open the book. These are, you know, like digitized programs and synaptic connections. It's not a book. And so they're just learned at some point. So it's interesting, because if you really want to know what are the programs in your subconscious, the ones you don't see, the answer is look at your life.
Right.
Because the readout of your life is a readout of the subconscious. Mm-hmm. And what you're, the things you're missing in your life most likely reflect the fact that your programs in your subconscious will not allow you to get there. That's why.
And the things that you have in your life
are the ones that are programs that allowed you to get there. So if you were programmed because, oh, you're a great student and everything, then you'll be the person who'll have great grades. Right. But if you were also programmed that you're not a pretty person or something like that, mm-hmm. then you'll have a very poor self-esteem, but right. a great ability to do well in academics, but you'll have no relationship.
So how do we shift this?
Well, the one part that I started getting to was listening to these thoughts in your head and correct them. As you hear them, so, you know, if you hear this voice that says, oh, well, that probably won't work out, you know, like, you know, you're thinking of something you're planning to do.
So that's a conscious act. You make a decision
each time it comes up. And you hear it and you say, well, that's, I don't like that. I can make this difference. I can make this happen. And you were actually lifetime correcting it.
Right.
It's a process of staying lifetime. And that's why it's called being Buddha, you know, being mindful. you're being mindful of your mind,
mm-hmm.
and you
and
are
present.
Correcting it. And this, over a period of time, can lead to a rewriting. But here's a problem. For most people, it's damn near difficult doing this. And the reason is this, you're so busy.
Yep.
You don't have time to focus. You're being drawn to do this event and then move over here and do this event. And so we're so on the go, these thoughts go through way too fast for you to catch them. They just bypass you and you miss them.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to do it because at that time I was out of work and I was doing a biological experiment of myself, because if mm-hmm. this, what I'm saying is true, then I should be able to get into the system and work with it, which
yes,
I did.
Yes. Yep,
okay.
Yep.
But then I found out, of course, average person can't really, in a busy world, get around to doing that. So clinical hypnotherapy, and that's interesting because that's a state-dependent learning. That was how I learned the programs in the first place. I was in a hypnagogic level of brain EEG function, bypassing consciousness, and the information was going straight into subconscious. Get back in that state and rewrite them. That's one way.
Mm-hmm.
And the third way is a variety of modalities, each one having some benefit, or, you know, and they're all different to some degree. So some of them work better for some people and others work better. So there's no one fits all. Modalities called energy psychology. Some of them have names like letters TFT and EFT and EMDR.
Oh, sure.
All those kinds like that.
NLP.
Some are called body, talk, yep. avatar. Psych-K is the one that I'm associated with.
Mm-hmm.
And these are very interesting programs, because most of them rely on kinesiology to access the subconscious, because the subconscious is connected to the muscles and the conscious
mm-hmm.
is not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The subconscious evolved first. The consciousness was added on in evolution. The subconsciousness evolved with the coordination of the body. So the subconsciousness controls all the physiology and muscle characters and actions. Consciousness is an add-on device that came on in evolution. And it's funny, because in my lectures I talk about it as an add-on option, which most people don't exercise because we get so caught into the programming
right.
of this is my job, this is my life. Now it's so subconsciously run that I can walk through my day and totally be unaware of what I've done and completed all my chores and duties and everything
mm-hmm.
while I daydream the entire day, because the subconscious, being a million times more powerful, is actually better running everything than is the conscious.
Well, and you get some skill with the kinds of tapes that are generated. But I want to come back to this the energy psychology, about what the mechanics of that are,
the first part is to help you identify the belief systems that are supporting you and not supporting you by using muscle kinesiology.
Okay.
And the reason why kinesiology works, as I said, is that the subconscious mind, it's just a program, is connected to the muscles. It controls all your muscles. Your conscious mind can have an intention, but it has to go through the subconscious.
Okay.
So the relevance is this. I make a statement with my conscious mind, and I test my subconscious mind by muscle testing, and here's how the test works. If the statement I make with my conscious mind is in harmony or agreement with the statement as learned or expressed by my subconscious mind, there's harmony,
right?
I have muscle strength.
Right.
But if I make a statement and my subconscious mind goes, well, that's not true.
Right.
Now I got disharmony because my conscious mind is saying I deserve to be successful and I got a subconscious program you do not deserve.
And so you're able to change that then by
hypnotherapy? Well, no. That your first test is, is my statement, the first thing you really want to find out is your subconscious mind supporting you? Let's say there's positive affirmations. I have a positive affirmation. I can become successful, whatever, mm-hmm. you know?
Right, right.
The question is, do you have a subconscious mind that will support that or not? If it does, great. Then you really have a chance of, when exercising that positive affirmation, to get where you want to go. But if your subconscious mind says you don't deserve things, and you have a cold day in hell before that little small processor called the conscious mind is going to change that other giant
Absolutely.
Processor.
Yep.
So first thing before you change beliefs,
you got to find out what's going on.
What is right.
Yep.
So you make a statement with your conscious mind. If your subconscious mind agrees with it, your muscle strength is strong. If the subconscious mind has beliefs other than that, the disharmony causes your muscle to weaken,
mm-hmm.
okay? And one just little important point, because people are very familiar with kinesiology, especially out here in California, a very important point is this. There's a thing called entanglement, which is part of quantum mechanics, that says that the person who's doing the test with you can be entangled so that the result can be skewed. And here's how the result gets skewed.
Yep.
If the person who is applying the pressure to your arm is in any way connected to the outcome of that question or statement, they control the test.
Yep.
So if I'm selling supplements, and my belief system, it's not that I was actually knowing I was doing this. My belief system, of course, everybody needs these supplements. And what I'll do is say, okay, hold this sugar packet in your hand and let's test your muscle. Of course, my belief in testing you is I already know that sugar is not good for you, because that's not my belief. And no matter what your belief is, when I test, your arm is going to go weak because sugar is bad for you. But now how about these supplements? Well, I know they're good for you. So when I ask you to hold my supplements and then I push down on your arm and your arm is strong and I tell you, yes, your body says these supplements are for you, that's not necessarily true. I'm controlling the test because I'm engaged in the outcome.
But you're also talking about some of the placebo effect from allopathic practitioners prescribing pharmaceuticals that may not be directly pertinent to what the problem is.
But that's what the whole game is. It's a belief system. It's a belief system.
Okay.
And that's why placebos are great, because innately have the ability to heal ourselves.
Yep.
It's only our belief that says no. But when the doctor gives you a pill, mm-hmm. and so he's reinforcing the belief, because remember, where did we get the belief that we can't heal ourselves? The answer is mm-hmm. when we were all kids, when we got sick, we were told, well, instead of
Mommy
fix
didn't
yourself.
Say, sit down and take a moment and sit quietly and meditate and all that.
But go to the doctor.
Go to the doctor, right.
I really like it, because what we get the subconscious is a direct connection. I am sick, go to the doctor. I am sick, go to the doctor. So mm-hmm. what's the point? Now, when you get older, how many of us feel sick and say, well, I got to go to the doctor?
Mm-hmm.
On the way to the doctor, you start to get better.
Now, in the Chinese model, they say, feel well, go to the doctor, feel well.
Well, the
doctor's responsible for a patient's wellness rather than their illness.
Right, they pay for it when it goes the other way around.
Right, but I want to come back to this.
So the energy
doing
psychology.
The muscle testing, yes.
Okay, so we do the testing to see, do I have a belief that agrees with me or doesn't agree with me? If I find out there's a belief that's sabotaging me, I want to mm-hmm. rewrite it.
Right.
But how do you rewrite a belief? The answer is, in these energy psychology modalities, most of them in some way engage a process called super learning. Psyche does it with a great intention, the process that I'm involved with. My friend Rob Williams developed it. And that involves that when you're going to reprogram, you actually get into what is called a whole brain state. And you activate right and left hemispheres.
And that's a hypnagogic state?
And it's a hypnagogic state and a super learning state. It gets consciousness. I mean, it's opens a window where you can download information like straight in.
Is that through the use of theta waves?
I don't know if it's theta waves only, but I know it really requires that right and left hemispheres be in harmony with each other.
Okay.
And it's interesting, because you can say, well, what's the difference when they're in harmony and when not in harmony? And the answer is, when you go back to that child less than six, there's harmony in their right and left hemispheres. a child 3 years old can learn three languages simultaneously and compartmentalize their vocabulary and grammar and all that stuff. You get to be 8 or 9 years old, and now I want to teach you one new language. You already find it's an impediment to get one new one in.
Right.
What's the difference? By that time, you start to enter into consciousness, and you also start to get into brain dominance, right or left hemisphere.
Yep.
And so when we're in that brain dominance, learning is greatly limited. So there's something about a super learning state that involves getting in this harmonious balance. And then you, it's the equivalent of pushing a record button. Mm-hmm. And so for example, I can give you my own personal experience having been through like the Psyche process.
Yeah, how do you get into the super learning state?
Well, I use the Psyche process, which is a balanced state. So you get into a
is it by learning listening to a music?
No. It only takes a couple of minutes. It's crisscrossing your arms and legs over your body because, simple point, my right arm is controlled by my left hemisphere.
Yeah.
But if my right arm crosses the midpoint on my body, it's controlled by my left hemisphere. But then, since the hand is now crossed over to the other side of the body, my other hemisphere, my right hemisphere, will pick it up because my hand's on my left side.
Yes.
So when you crisscross your arms and legs across the midline,
mm-hmm.
then that encourages both sides of the brain to be starting to work together mm-hmm. to consider, you know, to deal with this interaction. So the process in summary is very simply, I identify the belief that's sabotaging me.
Mm-hmm.
I create the belief that is the positive version, positive present tense version of what I want. I don't go into the system saying, I want to be something, because if I program that, it didn't say I'll ever be anything. It says I want to be something, means that I will always be in a state of continuous want.
Right, right.
And so I program in there, I am X, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, my subconscious mind doesn't agree with that. And how do I? And it's interesting because I get in this whole brain state,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a meditation state for a moment, and I repeat to myself, and I say, I want X. And the first, as I say it, different people feel it in different ways, but the first time I felt it was like noise in my brain. It was like static. It was like, what it was every experience in my life that negated that was like, no, that's not true. That's not true.
Yes.
And what you do is you sit there and you hold this super learning state, and then it calms down. Then you say it again. I want X.
Or I am X.
I am X. Yep. Excuse me, want was the wrong word. I am X.
Yeah.
And then you feel, well, there's less noise. And then you repeat it again, and then there's less. And then there's a point where you repeat it, and all of a sudden it feels so matter of fact that you can feel it. You can actually feel in your systems, of course, there was no questioning.
You check for a charge of differentiation.
The charge is totally gone.
Yep.
It just feels so calm and cool that all of a sudden you say, okay. And then you can then go do the muscle test, which is your immediate feedback. Meaning, mm-hmm. before I did this balance, my arm wouldn't hold up for that I am X. Now that I go through this balance, how do I respond? So I put my arm out and I get immediate feedback. Why? Now my subconscious doesn't have a disagreement. When I say that, my muscles strengthen.
And you can let it go and play those tapes that you've reprogrammed.
And you just reprogram it, you walk away and your life has changed right from that minute. Now, mm-hmm. where it's most effective, where you can see this thing where it's most effective is phobias. Because if you have a phobia and then you go through the reprogramming, I can stimulate the thing that caused you to respond.
And there's no response.
And there's no response. But most of our things are dynamic, meaning it requires me to go out in the world to engage with people to have a different outcome than the way I used to engage with people. So a lot of the behaviors are only evident after you've gone out and you've gone through the balance change. And then down the road, all of a sudden you turn around and you realize, oh my God, it's so different than it was because you didn't consciously notice it was different. It's funny because the people I remember Rob always used this great story about when he was developing the process, a woman came in and needed to take an airplane flight and she was afraid of heights. So, I mean, mm-hmm. getting in a plane was a big problem. So he would say, well, let's, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how afraid of heights are you? Well, she was like, she said a number real high. So he had a coffee table in his room, like 3 feet, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, a couple feet, whatever it is. Asked, can you stand on the edge of this coffee table? And she started to decline that. She felt a little uneasy about doing that. So they go through the balance. The balance is done. And then they test, well, about your fear of heights. And then so he says, well, how about, can you get on this coffee table? She says, are you kidding? That's only a few inches off the ground. So he says, okay, let's go out. Let's go outside. I got a ladder. Can you go up this ladder? And she said, sure. So they climb up the ladder. They're on the edge of the roof. And she's over the edge of the roof. And he says, well, how about now? And she said, but that's only so many feet, 10 feet.
She was arguing with him.
The point was, no longer, I mean, the change was, it was a program change.
Mm-hmm.
But then all the experiences that would elicit that fear were so programmed, reprogrammed in 5-10 minutes, that's all it took, right?
Mm-hmm.
That 10 minutes later, being confronted with the same stimuli, it made no sense that she should have fear. So she was looking at him saying, so what did you do for me? Because she couldn't even go back to the point that she even could think of why she should be afraid of standing on the coffee table.
Right.
And that's the beautiful part about it. It's like, but once then you the program's gone, it's rewritten.
Yeah, and you got to get people to write down what their problem was before they got involved with you.
They do that because they'll forget.
Right.
So it's really exciting. So there's a whole variety of different ones. I said each one has, you know, some people like one, some people like another.
But it's primarily engaging both hemispheres of the brain, going into a meditative state, running through the program enough times until there is no further
response. And re-recording a response, and that in a super learning state, that only takes a few minutes to do
right.
that. So a belief that's hobbled you your entire life. Now, this is not cognitive therapy, because that works, but its effectiveness is very
mm-hmm.
low.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, well, if I become aware, is that going to change the program? And it's like, not really, because I still have the same program, because that got in a different fashion.
So you're changing your biology by doing this then?
Absolutely, but that's what people do all the time, but they don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's interesting because, you know, the fun thing, because we're being given a fear about bird flu.
Okay. Oh, to say nothing of gays
and everything else.
Anything
and we're getting
fears. Carl Rove can think up.
But, and so the point is that we have fear. And so the question is, are we going to have a bird flu? And the answer is this. Whether it really exists or not, it's what your belief system is about
right.
that, okay? But here's an interesting fact. When all these flus go around, how many doctors get struck down by these things?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you're going to find very, you know, percentage-wise, not many. You're going to then have to say, are doctors genetically different because they don't seem to get the illnesses that their patients get? And the answer is no.
They're just making different choices.
They're making choices for the simple reason they have to go into their mind and say, can they imagine a sign on the doctor's door closed on account of illness?
Right, no.
It doesn't compute.
Right.
So their system says, no, I can't get that.
But now I also, there's a fellow that I know who's gotten, he's an oncologist, and he's gotten the same kind of cancer that he's been treating in other people.
And that's because there's also a preoccupation with our career preoccupation with the issues that we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's not a coincidence in these things. We end up in that direction because of subconscious minds going this way.
That's
but the question is, how powerful are you if you put your
right.
mind to it?
Right.
And
right.
the answer
right.
is, well, you could walk across hot coals if you have your mind set to it.
Yep.
But you can't walk across and then question. The moment you question, you're going to burn yourself. And then
mm-hmm.
it's like, well, that's a pretty good test right there, the power of the mind. But here's a real one. Down south, we have Baptist fundamentalists work themselves up in a Jesus state, start speaking
mm-hmm.
tongues and all that kind of stuff like that. Well, it's some of them in their testament that God protects them, play with poisonous vipers, rattlesnakes,
yes.
and cottonmouth.
Yep.
Now, they play with them. It's not that they don't get bitten, but they get bitten, but they don't have any of the sequelae that other people have if they get bitten by these snakes. They don't get deathly sick or anything like that. But here's the one that I really like, because this is like so phenomenal that it's hard for people to understand. Some of them will prove, you know, their belief that God protects them by drinking cyanide.
Oh, jeez.
And they're not affected by it.
Oh, no.
But I have to tell you, don't
That's
do
that.
That's
pretty dangerous. No, no.
Don't do that. You have to have absolute, unflinchable, unwavering faith in your belief system. And the issue is that what are they doing? Well, they're doing that miracle that Jesus said.
Mm-hmm.
He said, if you believe it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to believe it, you can walk across this fire.
Mm-hmm.
You want to believe it, you can drink this cyanide. If you don't believe it, then don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, Buddha even said, you know, don't get involved in these side things, because it really takes away the attention to mindfulness.
Absolutely.
And really coming to the middle And that was his whole thing about coming to the middle way.
And that's what all the ancient people, when you come back down to it, every ancient, you know, philosopher or some seer in that sense, has almost inevitably come down saying it's the way you see it, it's the way you live it. It's you have amazing powers and freedom, except that you don't believe it yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you don't believe it, then you don't have it. Mm-hmm. And then you back up and you say, wow. All this kind of, you know, this sounds really kind of interesting, you know, it's all that science kind of stuff. And then you realize the new leading edge of physics reveals, and I use an essay that was in the journal Nature in July. It's a great essay.
July of this year, 2006.
I think his name is Richard Kahn Hart or something like that. It's in the July issue of Nature. And the article is called The Mental Universe.
Oh, fantastic.
And he says, look, let's own something that we haven't owned, and that is this. When quantum physics was revealed and the mechanisms were revealed and accepted in the 1920s, it was understood at that moment that quantum mechanics says that the entire universe is made out of energy, that there's nothing physical to it, that human thought impacts the field and gives shape to the world that we live in. So in the sense, as Heinz Pagels wrote, I had to read like a half a dozen times because it was so profound that I had to keep going over it, was that the observer creates the reality.
And the question was, when I
kept reading it the first time, was like, well, that was an interesting tidbit. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, if the observer makes a difference whether this is an electron is a wave or a particle, what if it's two electrons? Can that be two waves and two particles? There are five electrons. How many electrons is what he's creating? Then all of a sudden you realize, that's why I kept rereading. It's like, it's any level of the world.
Buddha,
it's not just that.
Buddha talked about, and Robert Thurman was talking about something like this, about Buddha turned around to try to see who he was.
Yeah.
And he kept trying, he couldn't catch it quite. And then he found emptiness in that nothing inherently is separate in and of itself from anything else. And that's another way of demonstrating unity with the whole universe. So that's, but it's not nihilism.
No.
It's like, you're here because I see you. Right. I'm here because you're observing me.
And it's our collective agreement. And
exactly.
The world that we have is a collective agreement.
Yes.
And that's why it's time to change our perceptions from what we were sold, because the beliefs that we are living by day to day are destroying the planet at a rate that is so phenomenal that extinction is not far away. And the idea is, and I'm very optimistic, because although I can tell you right now, science is revealing that we are already deep into the sixth mass extinction that hit this planet. We're not flirting with it.
Yep.
We're into it.
Yep.
And that the planet is on its deathbed, in a sense that, you know, it's beginning
in
to
in terms
ail
of
enough.
Going through that gate. Yeah.
The issue is this. How can I be optimistic? And the answer is very simply, because I understand the nature of the biology. And it goes like this. A person could be riddled with cancer on their deathbed, and all of a sudden have a change of attitude that I'm not putting up with this stuff. I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden they undergo that spontaneous remission.
Absolutely.
And the fact is, the planet is this living system. We are the patients on the deathbed. And the reality is, if we change our perception, the garden will come right back and be here.
Just as much as ever it has been, if not more.
And this is why this physics professor in his book, his article in Nature on the Mental Universe concludes, and he said, this was known about the mental involvement back in 1925. But he said, the people who were the physicists back then were people who were Newtonian physicists who were now adopting the new view. They couldn't, in their personal lives, fully bring quantum physics in, because it doesn't work at the level of atoms and molecules. It works at the level of the entire universe.
But they couldn't imagine that.
They couldn't imagine it. So what they did is made an arbitrary decision in 1925 saying, we will restrict quantum mechanics to the level of atoms and molecules. And the fact is, what this article said, well, that was an arbitrary decision. That was only to make them conveniently happy that they could live in their world and still work on physics.
So it's really a state of ignorance.
And what he's saying, and this is why he said, the last two sentences, or very two short sentences, the universe is immaterial. It's mental and spiritual. Live and enjoy. Those are the last two sentences out of this physicist article. He's a professor of physics at Johns Hopkins University. He's not a weirdo. He's in the heartland of the heartland, and is saying, owning what we know, it's time to bring it to the forefront because we're destroying ourselves so quickly that this knowledge has to come out that we are mentally creating this. And if we change our mentation, we will change our world and the consequences of the world that we live in. So here's the physicist saying it. The biology is saying the same thing. Your biology is a result not of pre-programming by genes, but as a consequence of perception, mentation. And so the biology and the physics are on the same page saying, this world is a creative endeavor. Mm-hmm. And it's a choice. You can create hell, which we're doing, or we can create heaven. It's a matter of, you know, which perceptions you want to
buy. There is an evangelist named Carlton Pearson who has come to exactly this, and he's been excommunicated from the evangelistic community in saying there is no separated hell.
Yeah. It's hard because those are the dogma people that are keeping us strung out in the fear.
Well, they're inviting many people to participate. And one of the things that I said on this show before is that, you know, when people pump fear through the system, I've looked at that and I said, oh, you know, the people on the left are real fearful, and the people on the right are real fearful. And I'm saying, well, you know what? I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to choose whether to be fearful or not. Now, I'm certainly going to be choose to be mindful.
Yes.
But whether I incorporate fear into that is going to be something that's not going to be in this transaction. Because when I'm not fearful, it doesn't shut down the cognitive faculty and the ability to think critically. Is that correct?
That's absolutely, because fear shuts down the system. Protection means to wall yourself off.
Yep.
That's what protection is. So when people become afraid, they wall themselves off from their world. But there's a problem. Biology and thriving of the biological system is due to an openness of the biology to the environment. And yet, where we have been locked into because of the fears that we've acquired, accumulated, and are propagating.
And have chosen to...
We are closing ourselves down. And this is diametrically opposed to growth, because growth and protection are mutually exclusive behaviors.
Right.
You can't do both of them at the same time. Cells do not do both of them at the same time. So when I am sending a mentation to my body to be afraid, my cells are conserving energy for the fear to use it, you know, stockpiling. And like, if you're going to have to run,
but they can't
I'm going to have this energy. But I'm not using that energy to frivolous things like maintenance and growth.
Right.
Because if you're
and
being
caring
chased,
about and caring about your fellow human.
Absolutely. No, fear shuts your... This is a very interesting fact about fear. Fear causes separation as well. Mm-hmm. Because everybody's duck and cover.
Now, would you say that it works conversely like that, that separation causes fear?
Well, if whatever the reason, why would you be separated?
Right.
You basically have to go back and say that you must be afraid of something because you didn't want to engage. Mm-hmm. You know what's really interesting? Because we talk about the human body as a community of individuals, just like a nation is a community of people, okay? Mm-hmm. The parallels that exist here are exactly the same, and it goes like this. When we were afraid in the Cold War era the Russians were going to bomb us, we built bomb shelters. Okay, so imagine our little Northern California town, beautiful day, you know, the stores are open, businesses are going, schools are teaching, factories are working. It's in a state of growth. Everything's in a state of growth. And then there's an air raid signal goes off back in those Cold War days. Okay, well, when the air raid signal goes off, there's an immediate program consequence of that. Where do we go? We leave the job site and we go to the bomb shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, interesting point. If you have your bomb shelter and your neighbor tries to get into your bomb shelter, you shoot your neighbor, no matter how close you are, right? So right away, the nature of community, the first thing is, it's everybody out for themselves. Community doesn't mean anything when that bomb is going to drop, okay? So number one, you run to the bomb shelter. So you're in the bomb shelter until the all clear comes. So let's say the all clear comes in 10 minutes, you get out. It was no big deal. It was just like having a coffee break, 10-minute break, okay? I mean, the fear part gets you running, but you can calm back down and get back on the job again right away. But here's where the problem comes from. What if the air raid siren goes off, you run into the bomb shelter, but you don't get an all clear? The question is, how long can you survive in the bomb shelter?
Whether there's a threat outside or not.
You don't know that. You're in the bomb shelter. You're covering yourself up. You don't know that. So the point is, how long can you survive? And the answer is, to a X amount of time, because by a certain amount of time, you're going to run out of food, water, or air, and you're in deep trouble at that point, and you're going to die, okay? Let me also ask you this. While you're in the bomb shelter, how much productivity is going on in the community?
Oh, there's none.
None. Ah! Okay?
It's completely...
But growth stops, because protection excludes growth. You can't do both at the same time. What's the point? The cells in our body are people, in a sense, that live in a community. Our mind is the government. Our mind sends an air raid signal to be careful about the world that we live in. The air raid signal is manifest through stress hormones, which are the chemical version of a siren going through the system. Mm-hmm. Causes the cells to do what? Get into protection. What does that mean? Don't maintain growth. Stop. Conserve energy at this point. And don't interact with the outside. Shut yourself down. Mm-hmm. Well, it also shuts down the immune system. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden it's like, more fear that we're in, the sicker we become, because we stop maintaining the body in the sense of fear. And as I said, we also shut down the immune system. And the reason why that's happening is because the fear I'm talking about is not from within, it's from the outside. Like the Russians are coming from the outside to attack us.
But now it's Al-Qaeda.
Well, Al-Qaeda, whatever
or
it is.
Or the bird flu.
I don't care what it's from
the
outside.
Or the gays, or whomever that is touted by this amazing, for the first time in human history, there's never been a communication system that's able to come right into your home, right into your computer, like the internet, or like Fox News, or like NPR, or...
Well, there was a system like that. It's called the human body. Every cell is a living entity, and every cell is directly connected to the central voice. When the central voice has a fear of the world, 50 trillion cells know exactly that there's a fear going on.
Right.
It comes into every one of their lives. Because,
but never between human.
Not between
humankind.
Humans, but that's the next level of the human body.
That's right.
We're integrating a body called humanity with us as the cells and integrating and coordinating our activities to act as one unified living organism. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're not there, and that's the big problem in our evolution.
But in each of us who makes a choice to resonate in a healthful, open way,
can
makes
get there.
It that much more possible.
Yeah, but there's a point then that we have a system like a body where the stomach is fighting the liver, you know. And
but it's an auto. I had an intuition about that. War really is an autoimmune disease.
That's exactly what it is, because humanity is the living system, and we're attacking ourselves because we haven't owned that we are cells in this larger structure, which is fractal.
Yes.
So the image is we're this whole thing. So the issue that's interesting about the bomb shelter story is, it's the same thing applies to the cells. They get into that bomb shelter. Because that makes the sense. It says, if you are in this fear, you are going downhill. You're going to die. You can't, if you don't get out of the bomb shelter, what was the point? The universe and evolution gave us a protection system.
Right.
But it wasn't ever to run 24/7, 365 from that saber-toothed tiger.
And we don't say that when we cut our finger, of course there's going to be white blood cells that go there to fight the infection, but we don't look at the infection and say, oh my God, that's going to take over my whole being.
If it does, that fear can cause it to happen right there.
Yeah.
The fear will generate the system, because then the behavior has to be coherent with the fear. Mm-hmm. It says, if I have a fear my immune system can't handle it, then I will shut off my immune system to realize that as a reality.
Because it's that
Look,
powerful.
Look, my immune system doesn't handle it.
So as we sit, and I want to close here. And so as we sit here talking, it's important for people who listen to this to make a volitional choice to be most positive.
Well, it's to become more positive, but they also have to recognize, if you're just positive without recognizing that you are playing against programs that you may have gotten that are undermining you,
right.
Just being positive may be more frustrating than anything, because you're being positive and yet your subconscious program is undermining you. So it's not just being positive, but it's certainly trying to go back in to observe yourself. It's just being conscious.
Mindful.
Just observe yourself. But you don't have to try to go backwards. That's irrelevant in the sense of trying to identify who did what
to
who.
And the Eightfold Path was something else that Buddha talked about, about living and not killing, living in a mindful way. I can't remember all eight tenets, but that was one of the things.
It's basically, and what our effort has always been is like cognitive therapies, to go back and kill the messenger.
Oh, right.
And this is why, this is a waste of time, because you don't even have to go backwards. You only have to look at your life at the current moment, see it, and then say, what are the parts that are not working? And those are the parts that you can adjust. The ones that are working, you leave them alone.
And in a way, the parts that aren't working are a tremendous gift. Because then you know what to do.
You can see it.
Where to focus.
And that's where your direction is. So you don't even have to go back and try to figure out, maybe something happened in utero. It doesn't make any difference, because if it happened in utero, it's acting right now. And so going back and then blaming your parents for that is irrelevant, because it's acting right now whether your parents are here or not.
That's you that
can have this opportunity to change it. And the beautiful part about it is that it was fun, because when I started originally lecturing on this new biology, And I would go out and have audiences. I would say to them, man, if you understand what I'm talking about, you could see you can create this most beautiful life on this planet.
Yeah.
And in the early days, they would cock their heads and look at me and go, you know, Lipton, your life doesn't look so great for a guy who knows all this information. And I realized, oh, in the early days, that was what the problem was. That essentially said to them, well, do as I say, not as I do. Mm-hmm. That was before I realized the nature of the conscious and the subconscious. Because in the sense that my conscious mind had all the exact science, all the answers, all the way of doing it. But my life in no way reflected that. Then I came to realize, oh,
and
my conscious mind has this awareness and my programming doesn't care. Mm-hmm. And that's when the necessary step saying, okay, now I have to be proactive. It's not just becoming conscious of this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's taking this stuff and making it part of my life, not as something that I can bring up when I need it for a quiz and a test. Mm-hmm. It's not data that I can just bring up. I need to make it part of the program. So it's interesting. So I just get people to understand, we all have a tendency to want to get more awareness and information, but there's a point that I can say from personal experience, you can have all the information, but if the program is still the same program, all that information is fluff. And it doesn't change our lives. Mm-hmm. Yet, now that I've gotten through the experience on the other side of it, it's like, wow, not only did I go back and change those programs, but I've come to a reality for my own self in the middle of all the chaos that's going around everywhere that I seem to be living in the middle of the eye of the hurricane. My world is calm, cool, collected, peaceful, heaven-like. And other people's worlds are all around me are in chaos all over the place.
Yeah, but
and the difference is because I decided to, like you said before, not to live in the fear, to change these responses that were self-sabotaging. And upon actually making an effort to do so, I look around in my own existence today and honestly, with the conviction of one of those mystics in a sense of, this is heaven. I so feel that this planet is the closest thing to the concept of heaven mm-hmm. that exists in the sense that this is a
it
place where
is.
You can come and create.
Yeah.
And I look at my creation now with a sense of, my positive, you know, contribution to my creation rather than allowing my subconscious and teachers mm-hmm. let their creations run my creation.
Right.
I said, no. Rewrite them. I want different creations.
Yeah.
And now having done it, and it's like, wow, if I could just get people to see that it's like, oh my God, I was this pessimist, and life and things never worked and I struggled and all that stuff. Now I sit around, it's like, what gratitude to have this opportunity to be on this planet in this beautiful environment, to have people like yourself show up at my door and get to hang out with these wonderful kind of people where I still have familiarity with the other people I used to hang with,
right.
But I also realized at some point, boy, we're on different wavelengths. And once I started to adjust my thoughts, they just didn't fit in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that are here now are like, God, this is a great gift because I've created so much beauty.
Yeah.
And have this, and I know that it wasn't there before, and I know I struggled before. So it wasn't like, oh, I just won a lottery, you know. No, it was rewrite the program, and we can all do it.
Yes. Well, thank you for having us have the opportunity to hear you, and I so much appreciate your welcoming us into your home.
Well, I am so delighted, and I really hope that people open up their windows and start to look out and see a different life out there because it's so beautiful.
And what is the information how can people contact you?
Well, the idea is I have a nice website called BruceLipton.com.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of articles that are free. Go right on that and download a lot of free articles about topics that we talked about.
Sure.
Okay. So there's a lot of information there, a lot of references available, and they can contact me through that website as well. So
okay.
BruceLipton.com, that's real simple.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.